The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk
with Kia.
Now, the family of the Belfast knife attack victim Stephen Ogilvie has appealed for calm following last night's violence in Belfast, which saw some people forced to leave their homes and multiple cars and homes set alight and a city centre glider bus set alight as well. In a moment, we'll talk to Peter Shirley, director at the University of Liverpool's Institute of Irish Studies. But first, let's go to Barry White, News Talk's chief reporter. Barry, where are you at the moment and what is the atmosphere like?
Hi Shane, I'm currently in East Belfast and I suppose the atmosphere is a lot calmer now than it was earlier today. Earlier today when I got here, it was just a scene of devastation. I suppose firstly, I was in court this morning, Shane, and Hadi Alouddin, a Sudanese national from Duncarn Avenue in Belfast, he faces three charges: attempted murder, possession of a knife and making threats to kill a hospital radiographer. The charges relate to the stabbing of a man in his 40s at Kinnard Avenue on Monday. That victim remains in serious condition in hospital. Mr. Alouddin appeared before Belfast Magistrate Court by video link this morning. He refused legal representation and made no reply when the charges were put to him through an interpreter. A police officer told the court the victim lost his left eye, suffered significant damage to his right eye and sustained lacerations to his face and back. The court also heard that Mr. Alouddin has no family ties in Northern Ireland, is unemployed and the police feared he could flee the jurisdiction. Now, the judge at the case this morning, after refusing bail, Judge Stephen Keogh and Shane, he referred to social media messages calling on men over the age of 18 to close roads, wear dark clothing and be prepared to fight and to be arrested. The judge said anyone involved in attacks on communities or individuals should be under no illusion about the consequences. He warned that those responsible can expect prison sentences, adding that a message should be sent out loud and clear.
Okay, in terms of events tonight, we saw what happened last night. There is a, inverted commas, peaceful protest scheduled for this evening. I think it's at Belfast City Hall.
Yeah, look, there is a protest planned tonight. Look, Shane, they said last night's protest that was planned was going to be peaceful. It wasn't. Some of these protests across the city were sporadic, but here in East Belfast, it was definitely organised. It's, you know, people were told to go to certain parts of East Belfast and block roads. People were told to wear dark clothing, cover their faces, don't bring mobile phones. And there was also a message going around social media telling people to turn off the ring doorbells so that the people who were out causing trouble wouldn't be identified. So it seemed like it was planned last night. And look, when I got here this morning after last night's violence, the devastation was just striking. It was like a war zone. As I say, I got here early this morning. The two areas I went to were McMaster Street and Lendrick Street. They were two of the areas I saw on social media where most damage was caused, and the damage was extensive. There was a smell of smoke still hanging in the air when I got here. Several homes that had been set alight were completely gutted, with the shells of burnt out vehicles lined the streets. Just around the corner sat the remains of a glider bus that had been hijacked and set on fire. I'm sure many people have seen it on social media. That caused an estimated damage of £700,000. Within hours this morning, contractors were boarding up windows and doors of damaged properties. I seen families, Shane, packing their belongings into black bin bags, just rushing away from the area, facing the prospect of spending the night away from homes that have been destroyed. Now, one resident of McMaster Street, who did not want to be identified, told me she was shocked by the destruction last night. Outside her home sat two burnt-out cars, while her next-door neighbour's house was totally destroyed.
Horrendous. We had people phoning us, telling us to leave. There was buses on fire at the end of the road. We just had family members telling us to leave, and then we tried to leave. We were trying to get out, we couldn't get out this street. We went up here and there was people walking about with balaclavas, and we were parked right here where these have all been burnt out. But the worst part of this is, whether people want to admit it or not, these are good people in our street. Like, we're
your,
good
your
people.
Next door neighbours have been forced out of their homes.
Yes, and we have had no problem with our neighbours. We left keys in the back of the door. They would chap the door and tell you that your house was unsafe, or all they're doing is making people feel unsafe.
Your neighbours who had to flee and have had to find alternative accommodation now because their houses were burnt.
Yeah.
How long have they lived here?
Well, at least a number of years, and in those number of years there's been no harm, no nothing. Do you know what I mean? It's just, they don't realise this is not keeping women and children safe, it's just forcing people out and it's making us feel unsafe. We've lived here for 7 years all in, and not once have we felt unsafe until last night.
You must have been terrified in your home last night.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm from Scotland, so my mum was on the phone and she was like, what's going on? We didn't know, because in my kind of time, I've not seen nothing like this. Like, it's a bit extreme, if you ask me.
When you were sitting in your living room, what could you see outside the window
last
night?
Well, we shut the blinds because we just heard things kicking off. But when we opened the back door, there was just clouds of smoke coming from the burnt out glider. And we could just hear, like, every so often there was just explosions going off. I think there was maybe about 6 or 7 all in. And we were just getting more panicked each time. So we came home this morning, but now we can't lock our door. We can't, like, yeah, our house isn't secure no more.
And there's literally two shells of burnt out cars right outside your home.
Yeah.
Were you worried that your house could catch on fire last night?
Yeah, and 100%, because we had to just ask and rely on neighbours to kind of try and tell us if our house was okay. But to be honest, as long as us and the dog got out, we were just like, whatever's in there can be fixed. But
so did you have to flee your home last night?
Yeah, we did. We had to try and find somewhere to go, somewhere that we could take the dog, because family members have all got it. Like, in a last minute situation, we just were really, really stuck. So,
are you afraid that the same could happen tonight?
Yes, we're leaving again. We're just waiting. We've tried to get our landlord to try and help us secure the house, and then we're leaving again because we don't feel safe.
Where will you stay?
We had to stay with your sister last night, so whoever will be able to help us, we'll just go there, because we had to take today off work, like, because you just don't know what's going on, and we now can't leave the house until it's fixed.
What would you say to those who caused the trouble last night?
That's not standing up for your community. You need to be going across to Westminster. We can't control things like that. Do you know what I mean? Here, that's just, they're so narrow-minded to think that torching people's houses and making them flee their homes, like, affecting their property, is going to fix any sort of issue that they think there might be. You can't target everyone because of the colour of their skin. It's cowardly. Like, you don't terrorise people, you don't hijack buses, you don't put people who have lived here at their homes just to make a point. Like, what point have they made other than look at the disruption they've caused?
The great thing about Atlas Butler is they do it all. Heating, cooling, plumbing. Look, I'm busy with work. I don't have time to wait around or deal with lots of people. One company, one call, and they do it all. Wonder if they'll clean out my inbox. Seriously, offer that service. Please.
Atlas Butler is at your service. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Barry, you've also been speaking to a pastor in North Belfast who had to rescue women from their home last night.
Yeah, Shane, I have. Pastor Jack McKee says he had to push through crowds of people throwing petrol bombs and attacking homes to rescue two women trapped inside a house in North Belfast. He told me he received a text message shortly after 10 o'clock warning that the home of one of his church members was being targeted by protesters. When he arrived in Oakley Street in North Belfast, he found two African migrant women sheltering in a corner of the property as bricks were being hurled through the windows. Pastor McKee helped both women escape safely. He says the scenes he witnessed were deeply disturbing.
Yeah, when we got there, it was way after 10 o'clock because we heard that one of the members of our church, who's been with us for over 20 years, that our home was attacked, the windows all smashed. We got there, the house was in darkness. There were like four fire engines outside, police officers and a crowd of guys. There was an ambulance that couldn't even get near the place, because when we finally got into the house, there were two ambulance people there. They literally had to walk some distance to get to the house. But we managed to get in. The fire officers helped to get us into the back of the house. And horrendous just to see these two women. One of them had been lying on the ground for 4 hours, totally traumatised. We managed to finally get her up, and six fire officers had to literally carry her out of the house. But there were like 20 guys all masked up with bricks in their hands, and it looked like they were there for some fight. So I had to go over and talk to them. I pleaded with them to give me 10 minutes to let me get these women out and get them into my car. They gave me those 10 minutes. In fact, some of them actually dropped their bricks under the ground, and they gave me the 10 minutes and let me get them into the car. But it took six fire officers to literally carry her from the house into the car.
These two women must have been afraid that they were going to be killed.
Horrendously traumatised. They never thought, these women work in the care system here. One of them is a nurse. They have helped people who've been traumatised and gone through all sorts of stuff. They never thought that they'd have to face that in our community. And I never thought that I'd have to begin into rescuing Christian people in a Protestant community being attacked because of what some idiot did on Monday night. And everyone condemned that. That was horrendous what happened.
Was this organised? Were these rioters going to the homes of people who they knew were foreigners?
Some within the crowd said, we know somebody lives in that house, and then the bricks are thrown at it, and then they throw the petrol bombs and burn the house.
The two women who you went to help last night, what's their situation? Are they homeless? Did they have to find alternative accommodation?
At the moment, they are now homeless. We're looking after them and we'll continue to do so.
Okay, Barry White, thank you indeed for that report. Barry White reporting there. Let's go to Peter Sherlin, our director at the University of Liverpool's Institute of Irish Studies. Peter, your reaction to these events and the role of social media in fermenting the unrest?
Great motive for reporting there, and I think it's very interesting that two members of a community are condemning it. And I think one of the points there was made by Pastor McKee, which of course those involved in this type of violence won't appreciate, is the majority of people who live in Northern Ireland who weren't born in Northern Ireland are in fact Christians. And if you listen to some of the language yesterday in the Assembly from Unionist politicians, and if you looked at a lot of social media, you constantly had this term used about alien culture. Now, if Christian people are part of an alien culture, then that tells us the level of violence that is being orchestrated against people who are vulnerable and people who, you heard from your first respondent there, who treats these people who come to Northern Ireland as her neighbours. And I think one of the things which is really important here, Shane, is these groups that were out last night are connected to groups in the South, they're connected to groups in Britain, they're connected to groups globally, they are sharing the same language, they're sharing the same hatred and vile attitude towards people who've come to the island of Ireland and elsewhere. And we have to understand this is a problem not just within Belfast, this is a problem now right across Europe.
You believe Unionist politicians, while condemning the violence, have not gone far enough in their language?
Well, some have, and they made that very clear. But yesterday when I heard some of the commentary that was coming out of Unionist politicians' mouths, it was exactly the same language that was being used by the rioters last night, and it is exactly the same type of narrative that is being spewed out by racist groups who were also involved in that violence last night. I'm not saying the politicians orchestrated this, but I'm saying that they use the language that is used by people who are racists and who are driving vulnerable people from their homes.
This seems to be an issue particularly in loyalist communities. Why do you think that is more than a nationalist community? Is there a greater sense of alienation? Is it a lack of political leadership? What do you believe is the cause of that?
Well, one factor, of course, is where migrants live, which is predominantly in working class communities that are Protestant because of the availability of housing. But that's no excuse for this type of behaviour. There's also people within loyalism last night who would have been out trying to stop this violence. There are loyalist programmes which are about being anti-racist. But we've also seen this other phenomenon when people from Coolock have been orchestrating events with people in Belfast. Last night, I was getting image after image of tricolours and Union Jacks together calling this out as a shared cause for people, despite the religious and nationalist differences, that they had a shared cause in driving migrants from their homes. Like, I never in my life ever thought I would live in a Northern Ireland in which the Irish flag and the Union Jack were being used together for the same cause.
Okay, look, thank you indeed for talking to us. Peter Shirley, a director at the University of Liverpool's Institute of Irish Study. Lots of texts coming in on this, Ciara.
Yeah, including one that says, this is what happens when governments ignore people's concerns about immigration. A peaceful protest would be considered racist and far right. I think it's hard to describe last night's events in Belfast as a peaceful protest by any means.
John says it's worth asking what policies have led to the situation in Belfast that led to the unrest. I'm not sure any policies are a justification for the kind of violence. In fact, I am sure that they're not a justification for the kind of violence.
I don't think any right-minded person could fail to be horrified by the attack that took place the night before last. I think that is a given. But chasing, you know, defenceless women from their home in terror.
Pastor Jack McKee having to come in and intervene.
Asking for 10 minutes to get them out as the bricks were being hurled towards the... Like, that's an appalling vista for Northern Ireland and for any of us. But anyway, look, up next. Keep your texts coming. We'd love to hear what you think about all of it.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman. With Kia. Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.